in the long run, it's going to take a lot of changes on the court before something starts happening.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we speak with Albany Law School Professor Emeritus Stephen Gottlieb. The WAMC commentator is the author of Unfit for Democracy, The Roberts Court, and The Breakdown of American Politics. With liberal Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer announcing his retirement, giving President Joe Biden an opening he has pledged to fill by naming the first black woman to the high court, it was a good time to catch up with Gottlieb about what he thinks about Breyer's legacy and the future of the high court. Thanks for being here, Steve.
It's a pleasure, Ian.
What do you think the retirement of Stephen Breyer means for the court?
Actually, I don't think it means much, either in the short run or in the long run. In the short run, because Breyer was on the conservative end of the liberal bloc, it's not likely that Biden is going to be changing the court in any sense with his nominee. In the long run, it's going to take a lot of changes on the court before something starts happening. I started to think about when was the last time the court had dug in the way that this group of justices is digging in with a conservative position. And that's really at the beginning of the 20th, early in the 20th century. And there was a period when it was commonly remarked, Justices Holmes and Brandeis dissenting. They did that for almost two decades until Holmes died. And it wasn't until Roosevelt changed the court. And by changing the court, I mean he nominated and appointed someone for every seat, all nine seats on the Supreme Court. There was, in a sense, one holdover in that he promoted Harlan Fiske Stone from an associate justice to the chief justice. But with that caveat, he had a hand in every seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. At that point, the court really began to change. And then, of course, Warren came in a few years later and did things like one of the big things from the Warren Court is reapportionment. We started to have a court that cared about fair elections and not allowing one party or the other to just change the way that people are represented in such a way that their party and not the other party got all the seats. That happened in the Warren Court. The reapportionment decisions seem to be sticking, but gerrymandering is undoing the effect of what the Warren Court did. And for me, when Kennedy retired without doing anything about gerrymandering, he had suggested in some earlier decisions that he was thinking about considering some of the standards for evaluating gerrymandering. But then in the Wisconsin case, he joined the majority, which rejected that and treated the whole issue as something the court couldn't deal with. When that happened and then Kennedy retired, I just realized the court was out of reach for a long time. And Breyer's retirement is really going to make virtually no difference in that.
And that's Justice Anthony Kennedy you're referring to.
Absolutely.
Some of the analysis of Breyer's retirement has focused on his role as a behind-the-scenes consensus builder and, you know, someone who tried to build bridges. If he's leaving the court now, is there somebody left who can take that role?
What bridge are you talking about? I mean, Roberts was thought to be the bridge. While we had a Roberts court, we occasionally had a decision that favored the liberals, as we did on Obamacare. Not, by the way, on districting, not on gerrymandering, not on the other things that parties have been doing in some of the states to rig who's going to win the election, regardless of what the voters do. So I don't see a function there. Kagan is reputed to be very personable and very savvy, and I would think at least as capable as Breyer in making any connections that are available to be made. She's much more conservative than Sotomayor, who frankly is my favorite justice on that court. I think she's wonderful. I mean, she's been there, knows what's going on the streets, is not afraid to describe it. You know, Justice Rehnquist was famous for disciplining lawyers who use the term judge by accident because some statute says that they are justices. Mm-hmm. That's their title. And Stevens, as the Times reported many years ago, responded with the word something like, "That's all right, counsel. The Constitution makes the same mistake." And indeed, the Constitution in Article 3 calls them judges. To me, calling them justice is, for six of them, an undeserved compliment.
Well, let me follow up then to ask, what do you think about the idea that is growing in popularity among some on the left about expanding the size of the court to even out the conservative advantage gained largely when President Trump had the ability to get three picks in just 4 years?
Oh, clearly I'm for that. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like the long-term implications of that on the court, but frankly, the long-term implications of what this group of six justices are doing. And I put the election issue at the top because everything follows from that. If we can't win a popular election, if we keep losing the House, the Senate, and the President that the people want, then all of the other things that we care about are not going to happen.
And what do you think the meaning is of his pledge to name a black woman to the court for the first time?
I assume that the meaning of it is both to have a more diverse court, which is advantageous in itself. Frankly, I remember when Justice Sandra Day O'Connor described the impact that Justice Thurgood Marshall had on the court. And she described the fact that with an anecdote about things that happen in among the poor and to the black, he was often able to change their understanding of issues. Clearly, Thomas is not doing that for the minority community. He may think he is, but that's not what's going on. And so I think that we need that. I think Sotomayor is, at this point, the standard bearer for all people of color. And so I think it would be very valuable for her. It makes a difference when somebody has a like-minded colleague, by the way. There's a lot of research on that. It's been shown that it makes a huge difference in juries when there's more than one person of a point of view that they can stand together and resist and fight back until finally sometimes the majority agrees with them. So I think there's a value. And I'm not one of these people who thinks that, how can I put this? What the Constitution meant 200 and, what, 20-some years, 30-some years ago, is not something that we can directly interpret. So what we're really doing when we ask that question, what the Constitution meant, is if we're interpreting it with one group, we're making it as if the founders were a bunch of SOBs trying to do their worst for America. And if we're interpreting it with a different group, then we're interpreting it like the founders were trying to make as good a country as they could. And a Republican country, and Republican with a small r, Republican was the word that they used before there was a Democratic Party or a Republican Party. But we're partly casting our philosophy of law back as if it belonged to the founders. And when it's really something that we are doing, and we're doing it as much to their reputation as to anything else.
Well, let me end by asking you to follow up on that last point. Justice Roberts, in December, in his end-of-year message, warned his fellow justices to take it easy in terms of their approach to political influence. I just wonder what you think Roberts' role will be here in sustaining the reputation of the court. I take it you're not very optimistic.
I'm not, and I don't even know what he meant, because the court has not acted that way in the election cases. If it had acted that way in the election cases, and he were just talking about the philosophy and economic and other cases, I would understand that. But when that perspective does not apply to the elections cases, by the way, Kennedy was the only one who said that a very large donation, I don't remember the size of it, $1 million or something like that, maybe more, maybe three, I can't remember, in a West Virginia case where the election campaign was funded by one of the applicants to the court. And he said that's outrageous. He was, he was the only member of that block that thought there was anything wrong with that. So I just don't even understand what Roberts even thinks he means. He's clearly not calling balls and strikes.
Steve Gottlieb, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Steve is professor emeritus at Albany Law School. He's the author of Unfit for Democracy, The Roberts Court, and The Breakdown of American Politics. And of course, you can hear him every Tuesday on Northeast Report offering commentary. Steve, thank you for your insight and thanks for your time.
And Ian, it's always a pleasure talking with you too.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.